Some houses don't want you there. Tonight, we step into haunted Hinsdale House, a quiet home on McMahon Road in upstate New York that became infamous not because of one strange moment, but because the activity wouldn't stop. Over the years, families came and went. Some stayed weeks, some left in fear. Strange sightings, violent disturbances, and unexplained encounters piled up until the house gained a reputation few dared to challenge. At one point, a priest was called in, not once, but more than once, to perform an exorcism. Did it help? We'll find out. But whatever was happening never seems to leave for good. Our guest tonight is Daniel Klass, the man who didn't just study the legend. He bought the house. Daniel restored it, reopened it, and now invites investigators inside to face whatever still remains. The question is no longer if this house is haunted, it's why the activity keeps returning, and what does it want? Hour two begins now, and joining me on the Paranormal 360 on the John Schuster Coldwell Banker Hotline, Dan Klass. Thank you so much for being here tonight, Dan.
Thanks so much for having me.
You know, I started off with our friend Josh Hurd talking about Malvern Manor. I just recently purchased the Palmer House Hotel and Restaurant and Pub up in Sauk Center, Minnesota, because it felt like a calling to me since I came in the doors of this place 19 years ago. I love the fact that part of your story is that same vibe, that it's not just something that compelled you to just own a piece of property, but you knew that you needed to be there. You wanted to be the caretaker. You wanted to make sure that it was restored and that this history could live on. Talk to me a little bit about those first moments for you with the Hinsdale House and what drew you to it.
Well, just like any other paranormal investigator, you know, we had our investigations that we were going to, and the Hinsdale House was one that I didn't really have a briefing on. My co-founder of my group locally here set this investigation up for our group so we could film for our YouTube series. And when I got there, it was unlike any location that I've ever been to. You know, I've been to places where I've sat in rooms for 3 or 4 hours and nothing happens. And it seemed like every piece of equipment that we had in this location, it was speaking to me. It was trying to tell me, you know, trying to speak to us, but unable to. And I just felt like it needed to have a voice. When I found out that it was going to be torn down, something was telling me that we see these places get torn down all the time, and the history, the folklore of this location, I would have just hated to see it gone. So I tried my best to try to buy it, and it just came to fruition. You know, it happened. I feel like it was supposed to.
When you first went there to investigate, what were your expectations? You knew nothing about it. You get to go in. Had you heard any of the folklore or any of the possible experiences?
No, I wasn't even privy to any information when I went there the first time. And God's honest truth, it was in the middle of December. You ever see that commercial with the chainsaws hanging from the garage on TV? I felt like driving up to this location that they gave me just a super big creep vibe. You know, like I went inside, the kitchen wasn't heated. The only place heated was in the living room. They had blankets on the windows, and there was flies buzzing around. So it immediately gave me a creep vibe even more, because it's the middle of winter. It's below zero in the kitchen. There's flies buzzing around in the kitchen. And then they had me sit down in the living room and watch the episode of A Haunting. It's called The Dark Forest, and it's based on the story of the house. And I just remember looking at the co-founder and saying, we're not in that house. You know, I freaked out a little bit, because it's not something that you mentally prepare for. You want to, you know, you want to get your head right when you go to a place that you know had a failed structural exorcism. So it took me a while to gather my thoughts. And we had a really good investigation that night, though. Like I said, all of the equipment that we brought, you know, it was being manipulated big time. You know, there was no electricity except for in the living room, and any type of devices that we had were going off. We were getting EVPs in the basement and the upstairs. Things were moving on their own. And again, the flies buzzing around in the middle of winter, just it really intrigued me with this location.
So you walked into basically this bastardized child of Amityville and the Texas Chainsaw Massacre all in one place.
Yeah, that's kind of the vibe on the first time I ever went there. But then, I wanted to keep going back, because, you know, when you go to a location and you have a personal experience, you want it to happen again. And I went back many times before purchasing it.
When you were picking up the EVP and you're hearing things for yourself and seeing things move, I mean, how clear is this EVP? Was there messages that they seem to be sending through besides just get out and snarls or weird noises?
Yeah, differently with this location was help me. The first EVP I ever got there in the basement, help me. So it just kind of reminisced with me for forever, you know, just wanting to figure out what was going on or what was making this place tick. Were any of the stories true, any of the folklore? Wanted to dive in more. And that's always stuck with me when that happened.
Now, there was some pretty, from my understanding and reading, there was some pretty profound poltergeist-like activity there.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, there have been statues that have flown on their own. Back in the 1970s, the Dandy family that lived there had poltergeist activity happening all the time. We've actually captured it on camera. We have static cameras in the house. And part of my goal was to have these cameras running 24/7 so we could actually capture things moving on their own, capture shadow figures. The first night I ever had that, we were running the one camera that I had available through satellite internet service, and we captured a shadow figure in the kitchen on that camera. I have little trinkets and toys and trigger objects around the house, and we've seen those move on their own, fall off the steps, go up the steps. You know, it's a pretty unique location.
Let me ask you something, because you are an investigator as well. When we were talking to Josh Hurd, he said there was a time he was in the kitchen of Malvern Manor, walked out, comes back in, every cabinet is open. Many people have reported this specifically centered on, of all rooms, the kitchen. Then you mentioned the kitchen being kind of an active spot. Why do you think of all places that's the location that really, I mean, we always think attic and basement, but it seems like we might be missing out on something if we're not investigating the kitchen.
Yeah, I mean, the kitchen at the Hinsdale house and the living room are very highly active locations. So many shadow figures have been captured in the kitchen. It's a place where families gathered. So why wouldn't there be activity there?
Yeah, I often wonder, too, if we are looking at layering of hauntings and time slip phenomena. Is it truly that we're dealing with dead people in the sense that it's a disincarnate soul, or this place exists in all time and space, and this woman moved a cabinet in 1953, and it just so happened that that energy moved the cabinet in 2023, right, or 2025. There's still that element of activity taking place that's not necessarily something malevolently, intelligently haunting, but a reflection in time that energy expelled is still just manipulating things. Because does it ever feel nefarious or like they're slamming the cabinets back and forth to get your attention or frighten you?
No, not at all. It's usually just a subtle movement, you know, like the door will open, the cabinet will open, you know, the toys will move around. I mean, it's nothing, I think, intended to scare the crap out of me, but it does happen quite often. And many teams, we've been like collecting data on this place for almost like 15 years now. And just trying to document, like, is it residual? Is it not residual? And for the most part, it doesn't seem like a very much like a residual haunt. Very much intelligent, and like it knows who it's speaking to, or trying to communicate with, or trying to show people something. I have no idea. Still to this day, there's so many questions I have. But you know, we've been getting there. You know, it's owning a location, and you'll find this out, Dave. You'll be able to dive in unlike any other location you've ever been to,
right,
and really dive into the folklore and the stories and hopefully be able to give it some truth, you know?
We'll continue talking about the haunted Hinsdale house. We've got much more to discuss with Daniel Klass, and I'll tell him about a lesson I learned from the spirits when we return right here to the Paranormal 360. Welcome back to the program. Tonight we're investigating haunted locations. What draws people to them, makes them feel as though they're compelled to become the caretakers, to watch over these places, to make sure that the history is not forgotten? We were talking with Daniel Klass about, you know, some of the activity and watching doors open and shut. And like Josh and myself, I know you're also a skeptical believer. You don't just fall into everything is paranormal. I thought it was funny when you were telling me about the kitchen and that the doors are opening. I remember smugly going in and I had a little level with me. And they kept telling me about how the kitchen door will swing open on its own. And I tell them, well, look at it. I mean, the frame is off center. And I put the level up there and you could see the bubble's not where it needs to be. Of course, the door's going to swing open from time to time. It's just the house is settled. That's the case. And as I explained it, I set it on the counter and I go, look, this is level. this is where the bubble is. And I took my hand away and the level gets flung across the room in front of both of us. And I was like, oh, okay. So maybe we don't dismiss the door that easily. Maybe it's easier for them to manipulate. But I was like, oh, we can't always just assume science is going to make sense of everything that we're up against when we go to these places.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I've had some very big skeptics come to the house too, because I invite everybody there, and they've actually been able to like show me things that I didn't think about. You know, like a hole in the basement wall that there was air coming through that could have potentially opened a door or moved a door or something like that. So yeah, you have to look at everything, and maybe something that you, that's why I like having people come there, something that you may have overlooked, they may tell you about, you know, and then you can fix that. And if it happens again, then maybe it's more compelling, you know. But
right.
Yeah, I mean, you have to look at everything.
Yeah, and then it's funny, you think you're being smarter than the average bear, and you debunk something only to have supernatural remind you, okay, you figured that out, explain this, and then something remarkable happens, which it seems to as well. Now, you hear about a place like yours with poltergeist activity, and maybe you could break it down for people. Poltergeist activity seems to have kind of a wide, innocuous breadth of explanation. What do you consider true poltergeist activity?
Well, when I have a video of a toy going from a step down to a step up, meaning like something actually physically picked it up and moved up to the second step. I mean, things like that happening that are, you know, nobody is there, you know, nothing's there. There's no wind going to blow it up the step. Things that you can't explain, that happen when you're not around or that you can witness with your own eyes.
But how is that any different than just a haunting of a child's ghost picking up a toy and putting it on the stair? What, you know what I'm saying? Poltergeist,
yeah.
A lot of people think is kind of this chaotic energy, you know, doors opening and shutting, you know, kitchen chairs sliding across the floor like we saw in the movie Poltergeist. It always seems to be,
yeah,
like I don't know if it's rage-induced or just kind of chaotic things.
Yeah.
It necessarily makes sense.
Yeah, I guess I don't actually look at it like that, because I think like anything that happens, you know, I feel like anything that happens that's unexplainable, that moves or is manipulated, would be considered poltergeist activity. You know, like having that chaotic stuff happening, where it has happened there, it doesn't happen all the time. You know, it's not like what you see in the movies. You know, so I guess I'm kind of toned down to it for all the years I've been doing this. You know,
you said right up front you're watching this docuseries, and they're talking about the house.
Yeah.
And there's a structural exorcism. Explain, first of all, to the listeners that may be new to this, what is a structural exorcism?
So it has to be approved by the Vatican. It was done by a Catholic priest from St. Bonaventure University. And basically, it's like a house cleansing, similar to a house cleansing where they're trying to rid the house of the energies that are there. That was their intent and goal when they ended up doing this. There was much buildup to that prior to him coming in to do this. Of course, they did a mass in the kitchen. He came into the blessing of the house numerous times, and nothing seemed to help. And neither did this exorcism, the structural exorcism. They said that while they were doing it, they had a film crew there, the priest and a psychic there, and the family knelt in a circle in the living room, and the whole house shook for 20 seconds, and then it was like gone for about a week or so. And then it just came back full force. So it makes me believe that maybe the house is not the house. Maybe it's not what's in the house. Maybe it's what the house was built on, the land. Because the land is just as active as the inside of the house, you know. If you're not getting anything in the inside, you go outside, you get stuff too. I mean, they call it the Enchanted Mountains, right, where the house is located. So,
and cool. You know. Why is it known as the Enchanted Mountains? Apparently there's some folklore that speaks to strangeness on many levels.
Yeah, I mean, diving in, I mean, there's a lot of activity that happens as far as metaphysical. They do like what's the center for UFOs? What's that called?
MUFON.
MUFON has been out there. They've done some research there. Bigfoot researchers have come out, and the Sasquatch. We've actually captured some things that we think are cryptids. In the woods, a lot of Native American and folklore tied to the property, and elemental stuff too, or these colorful lights that you'll see in the hills that you can't really explain. There's a lot happening, and the neighbors can you know, when you ask the neighbors too, they've also captured things as well. So
it supersedes just being a haunted house, necessarily not spawned by a tragedy within the four walls, but that the land itself seems to be a living, breathing entity. And do you think that there is something to that? We hear in a lot of these stories and places, oh, there's an energy, there's an overlord ghost or spirit that's holding some of these energies back that they can't move on. That's why they're asking for help. How much credence do you lend to something like that?
I mean, in the research that we've done, there does seem to be some type of energy that is maybe like a more powerful, or maybe he's something that you can't exorcise. You know, he's when we've been doing EVP sessions or ghost box session, you'll be getting, you know, responses back and forth that are positive, and all of a sudden you'll get this real negative energy come through, and then everything that we were doing prior to that just stops. So there's definitely like a heavy hitting energy there. But I try to not acknowledge it, and I try to focus on the positive things on the property. And I tell teams that come in there as well to be prepared for that, because, you know, it's not something that you want to battle, you know, like, you want to try to stay away from it. Don't acknowledge it and move on to something else if it's trying to come through. And there's been many that have tried to battle it, you know, from the moment that I bought the house, teams come there just for that. So how do you
deal with that as well? And we only have about a minute and a half left in the segment, but when a group comes in and they're going to be the, you know, they've watched all the TV shows, they want to be the tough guys and call out the spirits and try to throw things out. Do you ever have fears that that's going to make things worse?
Well, I mean, that I do have fears of that happening, but for the most part, the groups that have come there have been very respectful. That they do call things out in a respectful way, trying to get responses from it. But for the most part, the groups that we've had there have an understanding of how we want to kind of run things at the location.
Folks, don't just sit on the couch listening to people tell ghost stories. You're fascinated. You want to go see these places, experience these things for yourself. And people like Josh Hurd and Daniel Klass have opened these locations to you so that you can visit, you can experience, you can investigate. Even if you don't want to go in to specifically call forth the spirits, you can be there just as a documentarian, in the sense that you are there watching this happen. I encourage you, go try it out. Check these places out. We do have a link for the Haunted Hinsdale House on today's program guide. So if you're listening live, or you're listening to the podcast replay, it'll be right in the description of today's program. Go check these locations out for yourself. Learn the history. Learn the mysteries. Be a part of it. Don't just sit passively by. Be a part of the story. We'll be back with more Daniel Klass, more of the Haunted Hinsdale House right after this. Are you looking for a place where history checks in with you? Well, in 2026, make your gateway one to remember at the Palmer House Hotel, Restaurant, and Pub in Sauk Center, Minnesota. From cozy rooms and incredible food to handcrafted drinks and a welcoming hometown atmosphere. Mayberry, right here in our own state of Minnesota. The Palmer House feels like coming home, even if it's your very first visit. And yes, the stories are true. Some guests never really leave. Friendly spirits, rich history, and unforgettable stays await. So book your room, grab a table, raise a glass, and experience why so many return in body and in spirit. You can call now and book your room, or come on in, make a reservation for a delicious meal, 320-351-9100. That's 320-351-9100. I invite you to come see my Palmer House Hotel, Restaurant, and Pub. You'll know why I've stayed, and I hope to see you again in 2026. Daniel Klass is our guest this evening, and talking about Haunted Hinsdale House in New York. The type of activity that you've explained, I can already sense listeners are like, dude, burn it to the ground, run fast, run far. You know that there's all of this going on. You know that there's some kind of bigger presence. What keeps Dan Klass locked into this place instead of running in fear, instead of you know, just letting it fall into disrepair? Because so many other people would, you know, like the Lutz family and others that we've heard about, they just leave. It's too much.
I mean, a lot of it has to do with other stories of the location, families that had lived there before and after, the Dandy family that lived there in the 70s that made it famous. I have stories of older couple that lived there, and I ended up meeting their grandparents, you know, on a whim after I posted a picture of the Hinsdale house. And she said, it looks like my grandparents' house. And it ended up being the granddaughter of Flo and Joe Misnick that were the last residents of the house. You know, she feels very at peace with her grandmother being there. She told me stories about things that happened to her when she was in that house. You know, so things, family connections, people connections, the mystery of the location, it being like a big puzzle piece, trying to figure out about the folklore and the history. You know, when you had me on Coast to Coast years ago, you said something about, looking at the grounds and ley lines and things like that. And in the past few years, we've been doing ground penetrating radar. We've actually found burial shafts on the property, you know, that may give some, you know, we're not going to be able to tell who it was, but it may give some inkling as to why things are happening the way that they were happening. We found a broken off gravestone on the outside that was half buried and half dumped in the pond. Now, if you were an energy or spirit, how pissed off would you have been if somebody broke off your gravestone and dumped it into the pond? Is that what was deemed demonic back in the 70s? You know, so we've been able to dive in. And to me, it just seems like every time we put a puzzle piece on the puzzle, three or four more are open, and you just want to keep diving in and look at. We just found an old foundation that we're starting to excavate, and we've been doing some metal detecting. I'm getting hits on gold, Dave. I want to find like a gold brick or something and then retire. You know, like, I don't know. Like, there's something that's hitting gold with the metal detectors there. So we're slowly excavating that old foundation out. We've hit the floor, and it's really cool. It's all old stone tool. We don't know what it's from. It might have been like an outpost or an old building of some kind that was just buried when they built the pond. And
obviously you got to lean into like the Ocean-Born Mary story, like Gussie Roy, and have your guests come out and rent them spades for $10 for an hour. And
right.
Then pick up, and they have to split whatever they find with you.
Yeah, no, we've actually had groups that want to come and just do the excavation. I mean, it's really cool, you know, so it's, and we found some really cool stuff, old pieces from the barn, relics, and really cool.
Has there ever been a moment for you personally that you were like, oh, maybe I don't want to be here alone tonight? Something that was unsettling even after all these years.
I think any time that you have a situation where you feel like something that's not there has physically touched you, it sits in your soul. You know, like when this house was going to be torn down and I didn't own it yet, we were in the kitchen doing an investigation, no electricity in the house, no reason for things to be going off. And I had just learned about Flo and Joe Misnick, the older couple that lived there. And everybody always focused on the exorcism. And I wanted to try to focus and see if, you know, maybe they're here too, or maybe there's some ties to them. And when I called out Flo's name, I felt like tingling up my arm. I felt like something was energy was touching my hand, because I asked her if she would hold my hand, and I had a K2 meter in my hand, and it went all the way up to 500 milligauss, and it was like nothing that I've ever felt in my life. It was just so weird. And then I had asked her, I said, Flo, if this is you, will you hold my hand as we go up the stairs? And you know, many have seen the K2 meters on shows where they leap on and off, you know, you're maybe having yes or no questions or whatever. I said, can you hold my hand as we go up the stairs? And it stayed lit in my hand all the way up the stairs into the master bedroom. And it just like, it sits with me, you know, like it's that's basically what made me want to buy the house if I could. I get tingles talking about it and thinking about it, you know, having that personal experience there. It just, you know, sits in my soul, like that happened. And then to meet her granddaughter after that, just like all the synchronicities of all that happening, it was just like, wow, this is kind of meant to be, I believe, you know, like they've showed their hand to me kind of in a way.
That's beautiful. First of all, what an amazing deal. You make this connection with the old owners, you ask them to make a physical connection, and it happens. So many people are fearful of those moments, though, that if you invite something in, it may act kindly, it may act helpful, as though it's trying to gain your trust, and then things go crazy. How do you kind of, you know, I mean, do you find yourself to be sensitive in a way that you can differentiate between when an energy is connecting in a positive way as opposed to maybe something that has ulterior motives?
Yeah, I try to, and you can definitely feel the energy swing at the location. It's not something that I do all the time, but it was definitely something that changed my perspective. I try to be reminiscent of that every time I go in there.
Do you, when you have moments of feeling overwhelmed, is there a spirit that you call upon that's there to say, hey, you know, hey, Ben, can you keep this thing away, or something that you engage? I know at the Palmer House, there's been times when I start to feel like, not that I'm afraid, but I feel unease or ill at ease. And I'll call Raymond and I'm like, hey, Raymond, what's going on? Who is this? Can you get him to back off? And then things seem to stop. Does that happen for you?
Yeah. Yeah. And actually the connection that I had with Flo, I do tend to lean on her a lot because she does seem to be there. She has a connection with her granddaughter. The family comes to visit her. They have a birthday party for her, an investigation every year.
Oh, that's awesome.
Really cool. But yeah, she seems to be like the kind of the protector of the location.
Very cool.
Yeah.
We've got about a minute left in this segment. When people come to the Hinsdale House, what do you hope they take away from that visit?
Well, I mean, they're there for a reason, so I hope that that satisfies their reason for coming. You know, like, I hope that something unexplained happens, some research tool that they brought or some type of experiment that they wanted to run turns out positive, you know. And generally, you know, it's not going to happen all the time, but teams that do come there, the house speaks for itself, I'm sure. You know, you can go around and speak to teams and groups that have been there, people that have come for tours. They've experienced stuff there. I don't even have to go sell the house because people sell it for me. And it's happened to so many people where they've had something unexplained happen to them at that location. It just makes more people want to come there and try to experience it themselves.
When we come back for our final segment, I do want to challenge you with, what are some of the more unusual and bizarre activities that have taken place there? And has it ever just gone silent for any period of time? Have you ever had a month or 2 months where there is nothing? We'll talk about that when we return Daniel Klass, our guest, right here on your home for the paranormal. This is the Paranormal 360. All right, the night is slipping away, folks. I hope you're enjoying it as much as I am. Happy New Year to all of you. Thank you very much for tuning in and making this show your Sunday night rituals. And for those of you tuning into the podcasts, I appreciate it. I forgot to even mention at the beginning of tonight's show, this is really exciting for me. I have just entered my 20th year of broadcasting. January 1st, 2026 was my 20th anniversary in paranormal radio broadcasting. And I'm so thankful for many of you that have hung in with me, for all of the new people that have found the shows and have continued to follow in the progress from radio to TV to authoring books. Thank you for being a part of this journey. I appreciate you more than you'll ever know. And to keep up with me and where I'll be, what I'm doing, and what you can join me at, just keep checking out darknessevents.com. That's darknessevents.com. And continue tuning in every Sunday night right here on WCCO Radio for Paranormal 360. Daniel Klass, our guest from the Haunted Hinsdale House in New York. And we have a link for that on today's program guide. And I encourage you to get out, go investigate, go visit, and learn a little bit about the paranormal and history. What are some of the weirdest experiences that have happened there? And more importantly, have you ever had a quiet period where it seems like it's almost disconnected itself from the paranormal ethernet?
Yeah, I'd say when I first got the location, the way that the bathroom was set up, that had the door to the basement right next to the toilet. So as you can imagine, I was sitting down doing my business the one time, and all of a sudden the door to the basement starts creeping open. From that point on, I've had a lock on the basement door. You don't want to investigate at that point. You're taking care of something else. And then all of a sudden, you know, time to investigate. No, it's not time for that right now.
Well, Daniel, at least you're in the right place to have it scared out of you.
That's true. That is true. another really weird, you know, and I've been doing this for years, and I'm not one to say like I've been touched, you know, so it's happened numerous times in this location. I had a friend that's a skeptic that's never experienced anything paranormal, and it was quiet the whole night. We sat and had ate pizza. We talked at the table in the kitchen, and we tried to get a little bit of shut eye in the living room. And that night, the only light that was on in the living room was a little nightlight. And all of a sudden, I felt like something brushed the back of my neck. And I turned around, and I could physically see a shadow figure blocking out the light, the nightlight that was in the living room. And I remember kicking over to my friend Kaylee and like, hey. And she turned around and she saw what I was seeing, and she jumped on that couch over to my couch, and I was freaked out, and I said, well, this is what you wanted, right? This is what you wanted to see. And it continued to go back and forth and just dissipated right into the bedroom, which was really, really cool, unique experience, kind of really neat to be able to experience that. You know, it's just the whole being touched thing is so weird. Have you ever been touched by a ghost? Do you think you've been touched by a ghost?
Yeah, I felt the brushing against me and the breath on my neck a few times on the Holzer Files TV show. My very first episode, we filmed at the name of the place is escaping me in Whaley House in San Diego. I got knocked flat on my butt. Something hit me so hard. It was like a linebacker. I thought a camera guy had tripped over the carpet in the dark and fell into me. And that's why in that episode, I don't overreact. I'm not freaking out screaming. Had I realized what happened, that might have been a different deal. But when I get hit, I hit Shane Pittman, and then I fell to the floor. And when I turned around, half expecting to see a camera guy on the floor, and there was nobody there, my brain.
You remember that now. Yeah, I remember seeing that.
Yeah. So yeah, I was like, what did that? What? So that was very alarming. Now, you mentioned too, though, that you think that there are some cryptid creatures that stalk that property. Do you ever feel that they've crossed into the home?
No, I don't feel that. We've captured them on the outside of the house numerous times. The only explanation I ever got with these cryptids are that they were puckwudgies. You know what a puckwudgie is?
Yes, but that's because I've been doing this for 20 years, but explain to the audience who has no clue what word you just seem to have created means.
The best way that the way I can explain it is a Native American cryptid that maybe protects Native American burial grounds. There's different interpretations of what they look like. But all I can tell you is that there was a researcher. Are you familiar with Jeff Fent out of Columbus, Ohio? You make beer boxes out of wood and stuff like that. So he comes to the house a couple times a year, and he wanted to experiment with different light spectrums in the woods because he felt really drawn to the woods. But a lot of people do because it's you get all this freaky feeling. Not to say less, he had some red light up against the trees, captured this creature just with these long nails and freaked the heck out of me, man.
And with the puckwudgie, I think that's an interesting element because people always say, why do Native American spirits stay behind if they've moved on, they're elevated? I don't necessarily believe it's the spirits of the Native Americans or indigenous peoples that are there, but I think it is something that they've worked in concert with the land that tries to protect their property. And the puckwudgies can be very frightening. They have a silly name, but when you read about them, I mean, when we investigated the Lizzie Borden house for the documentary Curse of Lizzie Borden, we kind of crossed that idea of, you know, what if this thing had possessed Lizzie? So in her mind, she truly didn't do this. Something else was in control at that period of time, and why she didn't remember any of it. I mean, that's a weird element to it, but we know possessions happen and spiritual influence has been known to happen. But the puckwudgie seem to fit into that, and they can be a bloodthirsty creature.
Yeah. Well, luckily we haven't had any situations like that, but we have captured it three different teams have captured this creature on the outside of the house, and it's not one to normally get filmed or captured like that. So we do a lot with Native American, like giving back to the land and property and trying to give donations and things like that just to show that we come in peace. So maybe it's allowed us to do that just so we know it's there.
Fantastic insights. Great stories. Tonight, we walk through different structures, through different histories, but we've come up with the same unsettling question. Are these hauntings the result of what happened there or who passed through there? In Iowa, Malvern Manor showed us history, neglect, and human suffering can leave something behind that doesn't need to announce itself to be felt. And in New York, Haunted Hinsdale House reminded us that what happens when a presence pushes back, when families don't just feel watched, they feel challenged. When even attempts to cleanse a space can only quiet it, and even then, only temporarily. Both Josh Hurd and Daniel Klass didn't investigate these locations. They committed to them. They stayed. And in doing so, they've learned something many never do, that some places don't haunt because they're angry, but because their story is unfinished. And if tonight proves anything, it's this. The paranormal isn't always about what goes bump in the night. It's about what refuses to move on or demands to be heard. I'm Dave Schrader, and thank you for tuning in and being a part of our Paranormal 360.